Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. We consider the impact of the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA law that's been on the books protecting those with special needs for 35 years. Two hardcore ocean athletes tamed the Ka'iwi Channel on their foil boards this past weekend. We meet the male and female champions and hear their stories. And the Protect Kaho'olawe Ohana joins us to reflect on 50 years of restoration work. They also sound off around military land leases set to expire. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Rallies across the state will take place starting at 9 tomorrow to mark the 35th anniversary of the ADA, the American with Disabilities Act. The law protects the rights of those with special needs. A number of organizations will be represented. And today we hear from Lou Erdeshak, the head of the Hawaii Disabilities Rights Center. The organization works with more than 1,000 clients every year and receives approximately $1.5 million annually from the federal government. It could lose half of that with the budget cuts, but Erdeshak is still hopeful because of a long history of bipartisan support.
The ADA was one of the great chapters in American history. If you think about everything from slaves were freed back a long time ago, this really represented and continues to represent a lot of freedom for people with disabilities. It's all about inclusion and accessibility. And so, I mean, it's one thing to think about that's going back to the time before you had the ADA, but if you think about what's happened since, so you have, like here in Honolulu, we actually have a pretty accessible city. So even if you're in a wheelchair, you can jump on the bus anywhere on the island. You can go to the movies. You can go to a restaurant. Even accommodations for people, if you go to the doctor or the dentist or the hospital and you're deaf, they have to be able to communicate with you in a way that you can understand, even if that means bringing in an ASL interpreter. Even in prison, they have to make accommodations for people that are deaf. Even I brought a case years ago to the Civil Rights Commission where police were arresting people who were deaf, and they didn't understand what was happening, so now they have to provide them with some kind of effective communication. You can't be fired from your job because you have a disability. They can't refuse to hire you because of that. They have to make reasonable accommodations in the workplace. So it's led to a tremendous amount of inclusion in the workplace, inclusion in the life of the community. Housing is covered by the Fair Housing Act, which is not exactly the same as the ADA, but conceptually is the same. So housing has become a lot more accessible. They can't discriminate against you there. You have the Olmstead case that came down from the Supreme Court, and people call that the Brown versus Board of Education for people with disabilities. So just like Brown basically required racial integration in the schools, Olmstead requires that people with disabilities have a right to live in the least restrictive environment in the community. So instead of living in a nursing home, then you live out in the community, either in your own home or perhaps we have a tremendous system of mom and pop care homes here in Hawaii, you know, where you live with a family and you become part of them.
People have options.
You have a lot more options now after the ADA that you didn't have before. Yes, there's no question about it. So it's a big deal. And, you know, I mean, I would also add that there's always been strong bipartisan support. Don't forget, it was Bush's dad who signed the ADA. And so this has been pretty much accepted and welcomed by all. And even though now we do seem to be under a certain amount of assault, I mean, you have a president who really doesn't seem to care much about people with disabilities. You have the federal DOE being dismantled, and they provided oversight over all the state DOEs to make sure that they were enforcing appropriate special education. You have DOJ that seems more interested in making sure that, you know, that they get rid of anything related to DEI versus making sure that prisons have healthy conditions. So you have all these assaults going on. I think the rally that we're having on Friday at the Capitol represents a really good time and a good opportunity to recommit, remember the history that we went to, and realize that even though we are where we are now, it's important now more than ever to recommit to the principles of the ADA and to the needs of people with disabilities, and also to believe that if you study history long enough, there is an ebb and flow over time. And so just like there was a time before the ADA when people with disabilities did not have the same freedoms and options, despite the fact that we may feel like we're under a certain amount of assault now, that this will pass eventually, and there's no stopping progress. Progress for people with disabilities will continue throughout history. We may not see it in the next couple of years, but I think it's important to have the long view and have faith that over time it will get even better. And I do believe that. And so I think a rally like this represents a good coming together of the advocacy community, our state agencies that really are supportive of this population. And I saw that the governor issued the press release, and I know he's a big champion of our issues. So I think it's a good opportunity, and so I'm looking forward to it.
What can you tell us about how the center might be impacted with all the budget cuts?
We are potentially impacted in many ways. We're impacted directly and indirectly. When I talk about bipartisan support for the ADA, there's also been huge bipartisan support for us, for the Hawaii Disability Rights Center. We're part of a nationwide system called Protection and Advocacy. So there's one of us in every state. We were created back about 50 years ago. You may recall that we were created originally when Geraldo Rivera was a young reporter. He did an expose on a facility in New York called Willowbrook, where people lived in these filthy, lousy, crappy conditions. And the real Bobby Kennedy, the original, was a U.S. senator at that time. And he took a tour, and he was shocked by what he saw. So Congress created the Protection and Advocacy System.
Do you get funding from them?
Yes, we get funding. We're funded by the federal government. And so the bill was signed into law by Gerald Ford. It was expanded under Ronald Reagan. So for 50 years, we've been pretty well funded. And our agency, we're about 90% funded by the federal government. We do get some state money through the judiciary, but we're funded almost exclusively by the federal government. The current budget, the Trump budget, if it went through, because we have 9 or 10 different grants that all come from the federal government. There's one grant for developmental disabilities, one grant for mental health, one grant for brain injury. It's all based on the disability. If you add up the total of the president's budget, it would cut our funding by at least half or more. So we are severely impacted by those potential cuts. So that's obviously, we have a lot of concern about that. We're also affected because I'm concerned that our clients would be affected. A lot of them are on Medicaid. It's not just the bill that passed that does impose the work requirements. I'm more concerned about what's going to come next fiscal year with basic funding for Medicaid itself, because a lot of our clients, let's say they're in the developmental disabilities waiver. If there's less money coming to them, we often argue with the state DD people about the need to provide more services than they're doing. If they get less money from the federal government than they currently get, that's going to probably pinch it even tighter. So I'm very concerned about the president's budget. Now, that said, nobody necessarily is convinced that's where we're going to end up.
That was Lou Ertachak, the executive director of the Hawaii Disabilities Rights Center. He, along with other advocacy groups, will be taking part in rallies that are being held across the islands tomorrow to mark the 30th anniversary of the American with Disabilities Act. Look for links for more details on our website later today.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Board of Water Supply, with a mission to provide fresh water to the people of Oahu, committed to conserving and protecting Oahu's water resources since 1929. BoardofWaterSupply.com.
You know, this past weekend, more than 100 foilers competed to tame the Ka'iwi Channel in a race that covered 40 miles from Molokai to Oahu. This morning, we talked to two of the world champions who made the crossing and came across the finish at Kaimana Beach. 22-year-old Ido Tanis won in the stand-up paddlers men's division in 1 hour, 56 minutes, and 55 seconds. It was a back-to-back victory. He won last year, too. And Annie Rickard was top in the women's category, finishing at 2 hours, 19 minutes, and 55 seconds. Edo, short for Eduardo, got his start windsurfing as a child on an Italian lake. The European champion moved with his family to Hong Kong, where he learned how to surf and then discovered foiling in Hawaii when he attended the University of Hawaii. He joined us in studio this morning, and Annie Rickard, who was born and raised in Maui, joined us by phone. She was on a film shoot in Oregon with her sponsor, Armstrong Foils.
I started windsurfing when I was 9 years old in Italy, and I only lived there until I was 12 years old. And then we moved to Hong Kong, and I continued windsurfing over there. You know, I was surfing, but Hong Kong waves, never really had real waves until I moved to Hawaii to go to the University of Hawaii in 2020. And then, yeah, I graduated from there about a year and a half ago. And here I am, still here, downwinding and loving it.
And I don't know what muscle group aches more, you know, after the race this weekend. How are you feeling, Annie?
I'm feeling pretty good. I think for me, like, my legs get really, really tired when I work that hard for that long, and my heart does too. I think I, like, on a couple of the races we did, I had like an average heart rate of 180. So it's definitely like a full body workout. You don't really get a break the whole time. You're pretty heavily working and putting in effort the whole time.
And then what about you, Ido? I mean, was it your quads, your back?
Yeah, definitely my legs, my quads. I couldn't even walk up the beach. I just had to, like, there's so many people that I wanted to go and congratulate, but I was just frozen on the sand. Like, I needed someone to carry me pretty much.
And, you know, I don't know. I would think that, gosh, if you cramped up out there in the channel, that would be mentally a blow. I don't know. Did you have any problems with cramping at all?
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, no matter what supplements, every year I try to take better supplements to figure that out. But by, you know, the like hour and a half mark, you start feeling some cramps come in. And pretty much everyone I talked to had cramps, but it's just about how you manage them. Some people will bring like pickle juice or mustard or things like that to fight that. For me, it was just like I try to breathe and relax my mind to just forget about them, because it's like, it's because you're stressed out. So if you just try to relax your muscles, breathing and doing that, it can help. That's just what I did, and it went away.
What about you, Annie? How did you deal with the pain out there?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm a sucker for music. So like if I have a good song, honestly, like Edo said, like I feel like all of the pain that I'm feeling just kind of melts away. So I think music helps me with that in some ways. And then I did try and get better about nutrition this year. Like I put a lot of electrolytes in my water, and then I have gels that I take. And so I think probably the most critical gel I took was about like 45 minutes from the finish. And I do think like in past years, I felt really bad at the end. And this year I was exhausted, but I felt a lot stronger towards the finish than I had before. So that helps. But yeah, like Edo said, I think just like no matter how good you are about that stuff, like if you're pushing yourself to the limit as much as we all are, I think there's no getting around the fact that you're going to feel really uncomfortable right before you cross the finish line.
I was looking at some video of you, you know, with the wing, and you looked like a butterfly out there on the waves. It was just so graceful, so beautiful. And you started surfing.
I did, yeah. I grew up on Maui, and I started surfing when I was like 2 on the front of my parents' board. And then from there, I like grew up surfing. I wasn't like, didn't do it a lot in terms of competing. And then I started stand-up paddling, and then foiling came into the mix, and I got into big wave surfing. And so I did a little bit of everything. And then when the foil downwinding became a thing, I was already used to crossing channels. And so that was just like a really fun thing to throw in. And now it's like one of my main focuses, which is a fun transition.
Well, it just looked beautiful out there, you know, as you folks were crossing the channel. And I just love to see these water sports evolve, because I remember being very frustrated when I was learning how to windsurf, you know, at Kailua Beach, and thinking, I'm going to get this, you know, but thinking about the mast and the boards back then, and then just to see the foilers, and it's like you're free, you know, you're out there on the open ocean.
Totally. Yeah. You're completely free and you can go left, right? There's no obstacles. You're just like on this infinite wave that can last 2 hours when we're racing from Molokai to Oahu. And it's even cooler when you can get all your friends together and be in the middle of the ocean together and you're all like doing turns and carving and having a great time as a group.
And I recall seeing a video of you online talking about China walls, mm-hmm. and how you have to carve out the different areas and you mentally have to prepare for, okay, there's no waves, no wind, and you've got to have a different approach.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're racing, it's every section of the channel has different sorts of conditions. So in some areas, the bumps are closer together and steeper, and then in the middle of the channel, they're further apart and bigger. So you kind of have to do a little bit of strategy to know how you're going to navigate those waters.
And what is it about the sport that you just love, that just grabs you?
Well, what I like to do when I'm not foiling is just going fishing and just going really far from land and kind of feeling at peace that, you know, you don't feel like you need to be anywhere else. And that's kind of what foiling does for you. It just takes you really far from everything. You're surrounded by, you know, malolo, flying fish, and all kinds of ocean creatures. There's no sounds because it's just your foil. So it's just really, really peaceful, and you have to stay locked in. You have to choose what your next wave is going to be, otherwise you fall. And there's just so many variables that don't allow you to think about anything else but the moment. And so that's really what I love about it.
And Annie, what about you?
Yeah, similar to what Edo says, I feel like I want to be on the water no matter what the conditions are. And having the privilege of downwinding, like, it is one of the most freeing feelings in the world, because it's like surfing, you have to wait for waves, and like you're in a crowded place most of the time. And there it's like endless, and you get to share bumps with friends. And it's like more of a team sport than you'd think of, just because everybody gets to be out there and have fun versus like, I don't know, we're not all competing for the same wave. And so, I mean, unless we're racing, of course, which is a different story. But yeah, I think it's like a form of meditation for all of us. And so the fact that we can kind of share it all together is something that we love to chase.
I just am thrilled to know that the sport is growing. You know, I understand that they had to close off entries because so many people are into foiling now. But I think it's great. You've been on big waves, you know, Annie, and so you know that adrenaline feel, I guess, when you see the big ones coming up. But I guess, when you're out in the channel and you get wind, you get waves, it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's definitely like I love to chase that feeling of when like the ocean is at its most powerful and you're kind of at the mercy of what it's going to do to you. And I think I find that in big waves and when I'm crossing a channel, just because like it's so raw and powerful out there. And it's fun to like, you kind of have to react to what it gives you. Like, you're not really in control. You're just able to control yourself, and the variables around you are changing constantly. So it is a fun thing. And that's kind of how I like compare the two, just because you're just doing what you can out there and enjoying the experience. But at the end of the day, like, the ocean is definitely the one that's leading the charge.
And Edo, where would you like to see this sport go?
You know, I really wish I could do this all year long, travel the world and just have races. It's funny, like, one of my sponsors is named F1, and a lot of people think it's Formula One, but, you know, essentially I really wish it was like Formula One, where you're doing races all year and there's a circuit and people are watching you on TV, and that's where I wish it would grow into.
Well, hopefully this will become an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be wild. I mean, you folks are certainly making your mark. Yeah, let's put Hawaii on the map in the world of foiling. Any final thoughts, Annie?
I hope that, like Edo said, we have more opportunity to do this more. I think there were so many people from around the world that came for this event this year, which was fun to see. And so I hope that we continue to see that growth globally and also more in Hawaii.
And Edo?
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people are a little bit worried about how to start foiling because it seems so complicated. But I think everyone should give it a try because it's totally doable to learn how to foil and downwind foil all together. So get out there.
That was Edo Tanis, winner of the Molokai to Oahu Men's World Stand-Up Paddle Foil Championship, and Annie Reckert from Maui, who was the first woman to come across the finish. The interest in this sport is exploding.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. Now on view, Mary Cassatt at Work. Paintings, pastels, and prints reveal how the Impressionist transformed the course of modern art. HonoluluMuseum.org.
It will have been a half a century in January that the Ko'olawe Nine made landfall to protest the bombing and military activity on the island. They later formed the Protect Ko'olawe Ohana, or PKO, to continue the work. Well, the group is now gearing up for the 50th anniversary with the celebration of restoration and aloha aina this weekend. The Conversation's Maddie Bender sat down with three members of the PKO to reflect on 50 years. We start with Kaipu Keala. You'll also hear from Daviana McGregor and Arian Chalk.
My dad got involved with the PKO, I believe it was through Auntie Davy's class, and he's been going to Makahiki ever since. And he became a mo'olono in the 90s. And around the time where my mom was due, he kept hearing a line from one of our chants, the Kiha Pai Olono chant. And that was deemed the whole Ailona that was going to be my name. And so in a very real way, I think I'm owing of my existence to Ko'olawe. And that dynamic of being literally the fruit, the dream that was dreamt by those who first landed in the 70s and who sacrificed and dedicated their lives to the mission of Aloha Aina is really something that I hold dear and that I work in every facet of my life to ensure that I am making their dream come true and making sure that all of the effort that went into laying the foundation for what we have now as Hawaiians is something that is not going to go to waste. I've only been going to island for the last 20 years. But just even in these last 20 years, the flourish of vegetation that we've seen on the island has really, it really feels like those first 30 years of work are now really kind of paying off in terms of the actual growth on the island. And what we do on regular accesses is when we get up to Mo'ula'iki, we tell participants that, you know, this would be an opportunity to take off your shoes and do the walk and feel the eha of the aina, because there's particularly kind of sharp rocks and stuff like that as you approach the summit of the most sacred peak on the island. But we also qualify that by saying, you know, it's not nearly as sore now as it was 10 years ago, because there's just this density of growth of all kinds of native ferns that are now coming and covering the rocks. And that's precisely the indicator of that our pule are working. Like Uncle Emmett says, you know, the makahiki is recalling lono to bring the wind that carry the clouds, that hold the water, that are going to bring the rain, that are going to lift the water table so that Kanaloa can be revitalized again, so that we kukulukea Kanaloa and it becomes a vibrant, the vibrant ecosystem that it once was.
You know, after the island came back to Hawaii state, they set up a Ko'olawe Island Reserve Commission to do the restoration work, and there was $44 million from the federal government for that. So there was a 10-year period of cleaning up the ordinance, and it was supposed to have been 30% to a depth of 4 feet, but it ended up being 9%. And it was supposed to be 100% of the surface ordinance, but it ended up being 68%. So there's still about 23% that's not been cleared at all. But in the areas that are cleared is where we as an ohana continue to bring communities, halau of different practices, and you know, all ages to come and experience the island and contribute to its healing. The Ko'olawe Island Reserve Commission also brings volunteers to help in their work, so to revegetate the island especially. But we also have rededicated the sites of our kupuna, our ancestors, in our religious practice to call our kua, our natural life forces, back into our lives. So as Kaipu said, the lono, but also the kanaloa and the laka and the kane, so that we on Ko'olawe have really become a piko for the revitalization of the Hawaiian spiritual belief system. The law says, too, that the island can only be used for educational, spiritual, and scientific purposes. It's, too, for the regeneration of the Hawaiian culture and commercial use is prohibited. And that's a really important concept to uphold, to make sure if we're going to honor this island as a sacred place, that it's not commercialized, that it is a place of refuge, one place in Hawaii where people can go to reconnect with islands, the islands as our ancestors experienced them and saw them.
We always go back to making sure we honor those who came and really sacrificed their lives, right? Like George Helm and Ohokimo Mitchell. And so we like to think that we're now living the dream. Yeah, it's part of seeing this was their vision and we're living their dream and being able to dream forward and look forward. And I think, you know, when Kaipo was talking about the role of Lono and the ceremonies in revegetating the island, right? I think it's also a metaphor in that. So over the last 50 years, there's been a lot of revegetation, right? The island is now more green. But I think in the same way, it's helped to heal so many people across our Pai Aina. And part of the wonderful thing of the Ohana is we have Ohana members on every island who are living Aloha Aina in so many different ways that are really uplifting communities and ultimately our Lahui. So it's really, really exciting to think about what are the next 50 years.
We've been hearing from members of the PKO, or Protect Koho Lawe Ohana, Ariane Chalk, Debiana McGregor, and Kaipu Keala. Let's get back to our conversation with members of the Protect Koho'o Lawe Ohana as the group prepares to celebrate 50 years of restoration and aloha aina. With military land leases across the island set to expire, the conversation's Maddie Bender asked the group what lessons they think can be learned from their activism. We hear from Kaipu Keala, Debiana McGregor, and Ariane Chalk.
None of us here started aloha aina. I think we're more the effect of aloha aina than the catalyst behind it, if anything. And we're just the people who've bared the brunt of the burden of aloha aina, if anything. And I think that this aloha aina of the Protect Koho Lawe Ohana, coupled with the religious imperative to ho'omana the aina, is by far, I think, the most important contribution that the Protect Koho Lawe Ohana, with the support of the Edith Kanaka Ole Foundation, has made to our lahui. Because it's allowed us to, like you notice, decenter the military. It's not about, like George Helm even wrote in his journals, it's not about the military. It's about our duty to the land of the Hawaiian, of Kanaka Maoli. And it has allowed us to situate ourselves, to reorient ourselves in relation to aina, in recognizing that, you know, if we don't take care of this land that we're living on, then we don't really stand a chance living here. That it's important that we uplift and we empower, which is another interpretation of, another way you could translate ho'omana, which is our word for worship. If we don't empower our aina, if we don't empower our akua, then they're not going to be able to tend to us in our time of need. What also is important about this is it creates this whole like divergent logos. It gives us a whole new way of seeing the world that enables us to go through life knowing that this is what matters. What matters is what we do for our aina. What matters is that we're sowing the seeds of sustainability. We're sowing the seeds of building our lahui. No longer is it about negating what's been wrong, but it's about what we are going to do for ourselves. Because the negation of a negation is a positive. You know, if you think about, you know, the military is something that's taken away, then we're taken away from the military. And so we're coming out with something positive at the end. And that productive capacity of ho'omana to mobilize us to, rather than ku'e, which was the big rallying call in the 90s, we're here to kukulu, we're here to build, rather than just tear things down. Part of that dream that they dreamt in the 70s and the 80s is for us to be able to sustain ourselves, for us to be able to create, institutionalize aloha aina in a way so that it's not just a couple of brave people bearing the brunt of the burden, but it's all of us collectively. We have a network of people who are working towards the betterment of our aina and our lahui. Because as Uncle Emmett says again, the health of our land is the health of our people, is the health of the Hawaiian nation. And so that's how all-encompassing our mission is as Pikeo.
Yeah, I think we want to take the long view, as Ko'ipu is pointing out, to look toward Aloha Aina, that these islands can be sustainable into the future. But in the immediate future, we have the, you know, military leases expiring. And I think we all know, I mean, our generation should know, people living here should know that that's not the right thing to do, is to allow, it's not the right thing to do to renew those leases. Why are we saying, yes, let's renew the abuse of this land? That's just not correct. That's not pono. It's not what should be done. The lessons of Ko'olawe is we can see the destruction of the island long term. And we had some mathematicians came. They gave a problem to the high school math students at their annual competition. And they gave them, this is how much land we have on Ko'olawe. This is how much rainfall comes. This is how much we can bring to the island replanting. And they try to estimate how long will it take to recover this aina. And they estimated 75 years. I think that sounds doable. I'm surprised. I thought it might take longer. But that's at least, if you count 25 years a generation, it's at least three generations before the island can be totally recovered and revived. So why would we renew military leases when they're not even taking care of the land they have? Why do we accept that they can continue to use the land without starting to clean it up? If they want to renew the leases, they better start cleaning up the land that they're using to demonstrate that they can clean up the land to the condition it was when they started to use it. Why would we allow the military to continue to destroy the land without doing anything to begin to clean it up? We saw on Ko'olawe, what they took 10 years to clean up. They were only able to clean up 9% to a depth of 4 feet. So they cannot prove that they are deserving of the opportunity to continue to use our land until they can begin to clean up what they are using, what they have done right, you know, up until this point.
Thinking from the point of view as a Makua and a Kumu, I think, you know, we think about like what is the belief and the mindsets that we want to instill in our keiki as we're raising them within this idea of aloha aina. And I think part of it is trusting in pule, ho'omana, right? What is sacred. And I think the other part of it is just trusting that, well, knowing what is pono and trusting that pono will rise.
Trusting that pono will rise. Those were three members of the Protect Ko'olawe Ohana, Ariane Chalk, Ka'ipu Ke'ala, and Deviana McGregor. We'll have additional reflections from these three on our website after today's show. And the PKO is to hold a fundraiser this Saturday, July 26th, from 2 to 8 p.m. at Dika Ko'o O'iwi in He'ia. It'll feature food, a silent auction, and music from Ka'ikeno Scanlon, Kimi'e Minor, and Po and the Forefathers. Well, that does it for us today. Up tomorrow, we plan a Hanaho show around specialty crops growing across the state. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of the conversation. Now back to Liberty and Meredith at the pitch table.